We hope you're enjoying WNF's new broadcast schedule. The new schedule is on our website, WMNF.org. If the show you're looking for has moved, you can listen anytime online at WMNF.org. If you don't have web access, just call 813-238-8001 to get a printed schedule. Support for WMNF comes from our members and the Stratus Center, presenting the National Geographic Live Multimedia Speaker Series. The first is Polar Obsession with photographer Paul Nicklin on Tuesday, January 25th at 7 p.m. More information at 813-229-STAR or StratusCenter.org. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals, now airing every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to noon. I want to quickly mention again that Alan Watts will soon begin airing on The Source, WMNF's HD3 channel. I suspect after we return to full broadcast power. And when there are specifics about the Alan Watts programs, we'll announce them right here on the show and elsewhere. Meanwhile, I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll speak with Michael Mountain, formerly the president of Best Friends Animal Society, about his new venture, Zoe. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Franz Ferdinand with the Lobster Quadrille here on Talking Animals.
Will you walk a little faster? Said a whiting to a snail. There's a porpoise close behind us, treading on my tail. See how eagerly the lobsters and the turtles all advance. They are waiting on the shingle. Will you come and join the dance? Oh, will you, won't you, won't you, will you, won't you join the dance? Will you, won't you, won't you join the dance? You can really have no notion how delightful it will be when they take us up and throw us with the lobsters out to sea. But the snail replied too far, and gave a look askance. Said he thanked the whiting kindly, but he would not join the dance. Oh, would not, could not, would not, could not, would not join the dance. Would not, could not, would not, could not, could not join the dance. What matters it how far we go? His scaly friend replied, there is another shore, you know, upon the other side. The further off from England, the nearer is to France. Then turn up pale, beloved snail, but come and join the dance.
Come on, join the dance. It's Franz Ferdinand with the Lobster Quadrille, an animal tune to ease us in today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Michael Mountain, the co-founder and editor-in-chief of Zoe, a newly launched online news magazine focusing on animals, nature, and the planet. Previously, Michael was president of Best Friends Animal Society. We'll find out more about Zoe and some of its more notable pieces so far and projects in the work. It's when we speak with Michael Mountain in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Not only when we're speaking with Michael, but during our animal news and announcements segment coming up presently and later on in the show when we have another guest that we'll be telling you about. In fact, later in the show, we'll, of course, step into the comedy corner, play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of Melanie Bowles, our guest last week, new book, The Dog's a Proud Spirit. Give you a chance to pledge for a pair of tickets to see Drive-By Truckers at the Ritz Ebor this Friday. And we'll have a brief chat with Jim Jablon, who runs an animal sanctuary not too far from here, generating not just national but international news by pledging to spend the month of January in the lion's enclosure with two lions. Right now, though, it's time for Animal News and Announcements segment, a detailed look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of events coming up. So let's turn now to interesting and or notable developments in animal news. We'll also welcome your comments, which you can share on the air instantly by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. So let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, our first item comes from MSNBC.com. A Fortune 8,000-pound elephant at a Tennessee zoo backed a trainer into a wall and crushed her to death. And the zoo said on Saturday it had temporarily closed its elephant exhibit. Quote, at this point in time, we don't believe it to be a malicious act or an aggressive act on Edie's part, Edie being the elephant, obviously. But the review is going to determine what happened in the barn, a zoo official said. So, of course, a direct echo of exactly the situation and the official response, almost to a formulaic T, that we talked about with our guest Jason Reibel 2 weeks ago on Talking Animals, all about captive and performing animals and when they escape an attack and then what those organizations do to sort of respond and explain those things that happen. So, got this from the Cleveland Leader. Headline, 200 cows, dead cows found in Wisconsin. It started off with dead birds in Arkansas and then fish in Maryland. Now the latest mass animal death incident involves 200 cows who were found dead in a Wisconsin pasture. The owner of the cattle, which were found dead in Stockton area, told sheriff's deputies that he suspects that the cows died from a virus, most likely BVD, bovine virus diarrhea, or IBR, infectious bovine rhinotracheitis. Samples taken from the dead cows were sent to Madison to be tested. Other animals and people in the area will likely not be affected by whatever killed the animals, say authorities. This is just the latest in mass animal deaths in the U.S. and beyond, which have sparked epileptic fears. I'm not even going back, whatever, among some groups. And this is something we may well discuss later with our guest, Michael Mountain, who's actually written a post or two about that on Zoe. And those of you regular listeners to ELUB's fabulous program right here on WNF are no doubt familiar with Sue Pike, the animal talker. And she is rolling into town today, as a matter of fact, for the first of a few play shops and other sessions. In fact, today, the 19th, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., she'll be doing private pet readings. Today is the animal communication play shop from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Yogani Studios, and then tomorrow, the 20th, it's private pet readings at Yogani most of the day, and private Reiki healing sessions for people are available on Friday as well. So you can find out more about that and get in touch with Sue by either animalchanter.blogspot.com or her myspace.com/SuePike. And what amounts to a broader, more ambitious use of therapy dogs, this was a piece a day or two ago in USA Today, but Dayline Denver says, no matter what problem has compelled a person to visit this homey psychotherapy practice just steps from a busy urban avenue here, post-traumatic stress, anxiety, family problems, abuse, an animal will participate in the session. We have found, quote, this is that we can teach therapeutic goals much faster, by incorporating the animals into the sessions, says Linda Chasman, a therapist for more than two decades. She first began using kitty kindness with clients 10 years ago and went on to seek certification in a specialty known as animals and human health. Unlike most practices where a counselor may occasionally have a pet sit in on a session at AATPC, the therapy animals, many of which have endured difficult histories before finding homes with these therapists and ultimately their calling, are at the core of helping patients sort through their problems. Rapport building is much faster when animals are part of the process, Chasman says. Not only is the presence soothing, but when they're around, people are much more willing to get to the issues, especially kids, who rather than directly confronting something, can speak to or about the animal. All right, we're going to have to skip a couple things here, I'm afraid, but got to at least briefly touch on Sal Esposito. Probably heard and read about this at this point, but this is the cat in Massachusetts that was called for jury duty. And then the folks, the Espositos, filed to have Sal disqualified from the service requirement on the grounds he is unable to speak and understand English. And then just, I think yesterday or the day before, maybe the court rejected that request. And as things stand, Sal will have to report for duty to Suffolk Superior Court in Boston on March 23rd. Many, many things I love about the story, as I said on Facebook last week. My favorite, perhaps, is that the cat's name is Sal Esposito. And I'm going to wind up here, of course, reminding you again about the Talking Animals Festival coming up April 3rd at the Lowry Park area just adjacent to the zoo. It's April 3rd from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Again, dozen bands or so performing animal songs. That lineup's shaping up really, really good. We should be announcing that shortly. There'll be pet adoption, nonprofits tabling, vendors selling, kinds of great food, speakers contests, and more. And $10 microchipping from Animal Coalition of Tampa. And another vet, Dr. Hart, who participated last year, has a great new idea for this year's fest, which I hope to be able to reveal on next week's show. And just more and more and more. So anyways, applications to table or be a vendor, you can get at talkinganimals.net or wmnf.org. And if you have any questions, interested in sponsoring or being a volunteer, otherwise just email talkinganimals@wmnf.org. All right, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is an early work from Ellen DeGeneres called Birds Mating on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
This is a weird mating habit. I learned this playing Trivial Pursuit, which is a game that I absolutely hate. I don't know if you hate the game as much. I think stupid people, don't clap, stupid people hate it the most because you're just... trying to save you. Because you're just sitting there, you wait. Because I mean, you're just waiting for it to be your turn, so you can say, "I don't know." Danny Kaye, I don't know. You're just guessing anything. I get the question, "What is the only animal that mates while going 80 miles an hour?" And it is. Yeah. Eagle. The eagle. Yeah. Good guesses, though. But thanks for playing. It's Danny Kaye was a bad guess. I realize that now. I had read that somewhere, but it wasn't true. It's the eagle, and this is what they do. This is really how they mate. The male and the female golden eagle both go 3 to 4 miles high. They start going 80 miles an hour, which is incredibly fast, and then they connect. I don't know either. And then they start dropping, and they don't stop dropping until the act is completed. So it's not uncommon that they both fall all the way to the ground, hit the ground, both of them die. That's how committed they are to this. I don't know about you, but if I'm one of these two birds, you're getting close to the ground, I would seriously consider faking it.
Woo! All right. That's Ellen DeGeneres with Birds Mating, taken from her CD, Taste This. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, where you can like us, our Twitter page, where you can follow us, and updates on the Talking Animals Festival added regularly. So that's all found at talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Michael Mountain. As I mentioned earlier in the show, he's the co-founder and editor-in-chief of Zoe, an online news magazine for those who care about animals, nature, and the planet. Zoe carries all sorts of information, articles, and editorials, many written by Michael, dealing with topics ranging from the recent mass deaths of animals scattered about the world to various facets of the Michael Vick story. Zoe also pursues projects and campaigns, including one at the moment about pit bulls, or about to launch, actually. This sort of work that won't surprise those who remember Michael as president and a co-founder of Best Friends Animal Society, which operates what's widely considered the country's largest animal sanctuary for domestic animals. And he was also the longtime editor of Best Friends magazine there. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663. Or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome back to the program Michael Mountain. Michael.
Hey, good morning, Duncan.
Good morning.
How are you?
Well, great to have you. You may or may not be the most frequent guest on Talking Animals over the years, but you've certainly appeared on the show in the most guises. I mean, you've been a guest a number of times. You were part of a roundtable we did several years ago in the wake of Hurricane Katrina.
That's nice. Then
just 2 weeks ago, in the midst of our conversation with Jason Reibel, you called in as a listener. So
I would have called in just now when I heard the story about Sal Esposito, because I was just thinking I wouldn't want my cat on any jury. I mean, don't cats find everybody guilty?
Well, that's the thing. It'd be rough for the defendant, I believe. Absolutely.
So when you
did call in, though, I did, once I realized it was you, keen observer that I am, I noted on air that you were, of course, formerly the president of Best Friends Animal Society, which we may come back to in this conversation. But mainly, I mentioned that you had a new venture that I hope to have you on the show soon to discuss. So being a man of my word of sorts, here you are. So tell us about Zoe, including its genesis.
We're a little, I would have to guess, like what you're doing, Duncan. I mean, you have news, you have topics of interest, you have fun stuff, and there are things that you take very seriously about the animals and what's happening to them. And what we want to do with Zoe is really bring a lot of these things to people's attention just generally and help put people back in touch with the whole natural world that we seem, you know, in our modern society to be increasingly disconnected from.
And is that largely the product of all of us with our smartphones and on Facebook? I mean, is that kind of what's led to, you know, the sort of disconnect you're alluding to?
There was a guy I was talking to who is a professor, and he was giving a talk to a group of students, I think it was at San Diego University, just about kind of disconnection from nature. And then one of the kids puts up his hand and he says, "But Professor, why would I want to go out and look at a tree when I can see one on my computer?"
Yeah. So, not much you can really say to that, I guess. Yeah.
And that really, you know, just says a lot about life today. And there are some, you know, as you well know, some really, you know, big issues out there with everything from climate change to the food that we eat and all of this.
Sure.
And, you mentioned Edie the elephant just a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
What happened there. And, you know, whether it was an accident or not, what on earth is an elephant doing in a tiny stall? You know, when these animals need, they roam for hundreds of miles out in the wilds of Africa in great big groups, always attached to the matriarch, the great mother who leads them for years and knows every little piece of the countryside and so on. And we have them stuck in little stalls. And, of course, sooner or later, an accident is going to happen. In fact, that same day, out in another zoo in, Nebraska, somewhere out in Nebraska, the chimpanzee got a bit fed up with being petted by his handler, his trainer, his zookeeper or whatever, and grabbed a hold of her. She screamed. The chimp screamed back. Another chimp came to see what was going on. And sorry to say, they both got together and bit off two of her fingers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, that's, you know, then they'll get into trouble for doing that. But these are, you know, animals who just shouldn't be being treated like that and related to like that. And we just have to find a new way, a better way, in today's world of relating to all of our fellow animals.
Well, with that in mind, I of course could not agree more, Michael. I mean, was the idea for Zoe sort of pretty clear in your mind as your tenure at Best Friends was winding down, or was this more a matter of pondering, you know, sort of like what really needs to be addressed or addressed in a different way, and then starting to kind of identify a path or a way to do so, and then just sort of shaping your kind of next move based on that? I mean, I guess sort of a chicken egg question.
Yeah, but you know, back in the early 1990s, when there were up to 17 million dogs and cats being killed in the shelters every year, and people, you know, just felt that there was nothing they could do about that and so on. And in the early 1990s, and I'm, you know, real proud that we at Best Friends were part of that, and this whole grassroots movement sprang up all over the country, and people realized that there was an awful lot you could do, you know, just getting your pets fixed or adopting, not buying from stores and going and helping out at the local humane society. And the numbers dropped just dramatically over about 10 years, Duncan, until there were less than 5 million. I mean, that's just a huge drop every year being killed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that whole campaign has really gone very, very well. And it was my sense that we could do something similar if we approach it in a positive way, if we bring people in at a, again, at a grassroots level and really approach this, you know, positively as opposed to just a lot of the sad and often very confusing stories that you get in the regular media, that if we really approach this the same way as we approach best friends, we could do something for all of the other animals too. And that's really the basis of Zoe.
And so as you were sort of pondering that and seeing, okay, well, here's what we did with No More Homeless Pets and trying to cut down on all those huge numbers of animals euthanized. And obviously it was a dramatic result, as you point out. I mean, at what point in sort of pondering this, was it clear to you that it should be an editorial enterprise, albeit online, rather than, say, another sanctuary, another sort of, physical, operation, yeah, with people and campaigns in that way?
In part because so much of what we did, I mean, obviously we had, the sanctuary at Best Friends, and we had campaigns as well, but so much of the work was actually driven by Best Friends magazine. And so that's really it for Zoe. Yes, you could have a sanctuary for wildlife and you could run a number of campaigns like so many of the other organizations do. You have World Wildlife, you have PETA, you have the Humane Society of the United States, you have so many of those. But where most people connect these days is basically through the media and the news media. I mean, we are a media-driven society, and so it seems to me that's really where we have to go.
So in a way, it sounds like, you know, as much as we were sort of laughing a little bit about it, that this is also a way then to try to reach the kids sitting in the class saying, hey, why go outside when I can look at this on my smartphone? It's like, well, hey, if that's how we're going to reach the people that we really need to speak to about these issues, let's reach them where they're spending their time and getting their information.
That's exactly what we need to do, and of course, that's exactly what you're doing too.
Right. Yeah. I'd like to think so, Michael.
Absolutely.
So then, is there a let me just let folks know again. If you just tune in, we're speaking with Michael Mountain, former president of Best Friends Animal Society, about his new venture, Zoe, an online news magazine about animals and other topics. And we invite you, of course, to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. So maybe there actually is one, but whether there's a specific one or not, what would you sort of say is the Zoe mission statement at the moment?
To bring people together in a grassroots community to help animals of all kinds locally and to connect globally. It is your basic, original think globally and act locally. And let's stay in touch with all the good things that are happening for animals, nature, and the environment. And let's find what we can do to help the animals and the whole world of nature just in our own neighborhoods.
Yeah, okay. Well, that makes sense because, I mean, it already seems like it has a lot more on its mind than sort of merely seeking to inform. It seems like we've already traded some email about a project in the works, and it sounds like there's probably others that are, well more than, hey, here's an article or here's an editorial that is certainly valuable in its own way, but here's something more that we can do on the Zoe side of the equation.
And simply by telling the stories about it, there's a lot that people can do. I mean, thinking about in your, not exactly your neighborhood, but in Florida, statewide. I mean, you have their operations like SeaWorld and the Miami SeaQuarium and so on and so on, and people don't necessarily know that these really are not good places for the animals. I mean, there have been just terrible tragedies for people and animals at SeaWorld in Orlando, and we say to people, through our publication, here's what you can do to help. Please don't buy a ticket. Don't go there. Don't patronize these places. And you were talking a couple of weeks ago, about the circus being in town there, and we would say the same thing.
Sure.
Don't patronize these places. Don't buy a ticket. There are very simple things like that people can do locally. If you want to help the environment, for example, one really simple thing that we can all do, I mean, we don't want to go, radical on everybody. But if we all just do one simple thing like stop eating meat just one day a week, I mean, this would make a huge, you know, people then really know what a big difference this can make literally for our environment and for the animals everywhere.
Yeah, well, absolutely, and it sounds like, you know, not surprisingly, that's sort of Zoe's MO. It's certainly the MO of this show, which is, you know, for people who are willing to take big leaps and change their life, that's great. We applaud them, but sometimes it's more about the smaller steps to get there. And like you suggest, if you just decide, okay, you know what, tomorrow I'm just not gonna eat meat where I normally would. You know, not committing to anything much more than that at the moment, but that's huge, as you suggest, on so many levels, you know, including obviously health, environmental, and, of course, the animals that, reap the benefits of that.
Yeah. And indeed, absolutely. You know, Bill Clinton made, big news, just a couple of months ago when he announced that he was eating a largely, you know, plant-based diet, these days. And he went there simply for, you know, health reasons. Although his daughter Chelsea is, I believe, a committed, vegetarian. You know, just, look at someone like that today and you can see that, it is just much, much better for you. And of course, you know, what's good for us is good for the animals. What's good for the animals is good for us.
Absolutely. And actually, on a related note, we had Dr. Neil Bernard on the show a couple months ago, and he's actually rolling through town again locally here on Sunday, February 27th. But yeah, we spoke, among other things, about, you know, Bill Clinton and just, you know, the kind of impact, obviously, that someone that's, you know, that high profile and people aware of, obviously, the sort of the health issues and then, you know, kind of what's happened in the wake of switching over to the plant-based diet for him.
Yes, exactly. It's just generally kind of confusing to people when you hear all of these stories in the news about birds falling out of the sky, you know, the hundreds of cows suddenly dead on the ground up in where is it this week?
That was Wisconsin. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because that's certainly one of the things that you had an interesting, well done piece of course in Zoe called the Flockalypse, which I thought was great. So yeah, maybe you could sort of just address sort of what's been going on. I alluded to the broader incidents, but maybe you could touch on that a little bit more directly.
Well, we don't know exactly what's going on, and nobody knows exactly what's going on. There are plenty of scientists who say, you know, it's not that more of this is happening, it's just that we're hearing about it more. And to a certain extent, that's true, but there's also the fact that I think people are really just beginning to understand that something is just a little bit adrift in our whole relationship to the animals, you know, with more pesticides being used. There was a possibility that when a lot of those birds were falling out of the sky, and this was actually in Italy, this wasn't in the United States, that this had some connection with the Gulf oil crisis earlier last year, because a lot of the gases from the spilled oil got into the atmosphere, and that was thought to be a good thing at the time. But it's quite possible, and there is some scientific evidence for it, that this was causing the death of birds in Italy who were dying because of oxygen deprivation. And they could see that that was the case, but nobody knew why that would be the case, unless there was something in the air that was causing all of this. And so you've just got so much going on with, you know, poisons and pesticides and antibiotics fed to the animals at factory farms and so on. And, you know, sooner or later, these things start to have effects, and we're now beginning to see it just all over the world.
Yeah. Yeah, and it starts, you know, when it's happening to that degree, the coincidence factor starts to diminish.
It's just a few too many coincidences.
Yeah.
Just as it is with what's happening with the weather. You know, you've got more storms, more heat waves, more cold waves, and that's all part of the general climate change that's happening. And people are beginning to, I think, understand now that this is important, it's serious, and we have to actually get on board and work together to make changes in our own lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I forget what day it was, but I think in the last week or so, there was one day where 49 states had snow, which, you know, certainly suggests something is shifting.
So. Everywhere except your sunny state of Florida.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, for better or worse. So this is Talking Animals. Our guest is Michael Mountain, whose new venture is Zoe, an online news magazine about animals, nature, the environment, and other topics. If you'd like to ask Michael a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. And, of course, you can find Zoe at zoenature.org. So I kind of touched on this, but then we got onto something else. But again, one sort of measure of Zoe hardly being confined to just articles and editorials, as much as those are great and valuable and informative in all kinds of ways, is this Stubby Dog, the project about pit bulls. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what you hope to accomplish with it?
We will be up online, in fact, with stubbydog.org in just a few days, in fact, Duncan, and you can already find us on Facebook at Stubby Dogs with an S on the end.
Okay.
Facebook with Stubby Dogs. And that's another really, you know, to us very important issue for the homeless pets, because I was saying just what a difference has happened for homeless pets over the last, you know, dozen years or so. But for the pit bulls, it hasn't happened, and there's just such a lot of misunderstanding out there about these dogs. And, you know, even with a lot of publicity for things like, you know, Michael Vick and the dogs, in fact, who came to us when I was at Best Friends,
mm-hmm.
And people, I think, are a lot more sympathetic toward the plight of pit bulls these days, but they're still just as afraid as they ever were. So, you know, anybody with a pit bull as a pet knows that if you... Well, in fact, you had a kind of little comedy item about it a few weeks ago yourself about, you know, the guy who says he walks down the street with his pit bull and everybody crosses the street.
Right, Bill Burr, yeah, for
exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, you know, comical, but in fact, you know, it's also very true.
Yeah.
And pit bulls cause no more attacks on people than any other kind of dog. In fact, I remember Best Friends, I think the most vicious dog, and the one we had to keep everybody away from when they came as visitors, wasn't a pit bull or a Rottweiler or anything like that. He was a very badly behaved little dachshund.
Really?
So Stubby Dog is going to be just all about helping to, you know, change the kind of prejudice and discrimination that we have towards, you know, whichever dog it is. You know, it's pit bulls now, but, you know, 50 years ago it was German Shepherds.
Right. No, it does. That's, you know, every generation or two there does seem to be another dog that kind of takes center stage in that way.
And if you just go about, you know, banning the dogs or whatever, then the people who are actually causing the real problems themselves, they just switch to a different dog.
Sure.
That's exactly what happened with the German Shepherds and then the Dobermans after that, and then when it was the Rottweilers, and now it's the pit bulls. And it really isn't about the dogs at all. You know, it's about, you know, other, you know, fears and all sorts of things that people displace their fears of, you know, sometimes of one particular group of people, and you don't want to say things about them because it's politically incorrect, so you go after the dogs instead.
Yeah. And since you did touch on it, you know, the Michael Vick thing, which, you know, is kind of such a long-standing issue that you and I have talked about it on the air, I think, a couple years ago. But it does seem like it's sort of just hit a broader, awareness for many people, I think, in the wake of President Obama's comments, to some extent Tucker Carlson's comments, and you know, now, well, it has always been, but I guess more broadly, it's a really emotionally charged issue, and I mean, talk about one of those where there is no middle ground. I mean, boy, you are either, you know, with them or against them, and you're vehement in either position.
I'm the one thing that really, really stands out to me that I think is the absolute key thing about Michael Vick as a person, and I'm not a psychologist or an analyst, and I don't know, you know, anything, obviously can't speak to his psychological condition or anything like that, but the one thing I can say absolutely categorically is that neither when he was in court nor in any of the interviews that he has done has Michael Vick ever actually talked about what he did to those dogs.
Yeah.
All he has ever admitted to, I think I have this kind of quote-unquote, is that I didn't step up, I wasn't a leader, I didn't stop it. And that is such a total denial of what that guy was actually doing in his own backyard to those dogs, that if he cannot actually speak to and acknowledge what he did, then he simply is not fit to be around any dog ever. I think it's simple as that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because you know the animal world is rife with people who at one point or another you know had their own tale of redemption, but some people or maybe some acts maybe just are sort of ineligible for that sort of redemption, especially as you're suggesting, if the person in question has never really acknowledged that, you know, that they had something to redeem themselves for, or the scope, much less, of what they did. And it seems go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had a veterinarian at Best Friends who came specifically because he wanted to kind of repay a debt. I mean, he had worked at an experimental laboratory. And as many veterinarians do, you know, they need a job and so on and so on. And he just felt terrible, terrible about this. And he wanted to make up for it. And so he wanted to work with, you know, homeless dogs and cats and any other animals who needed help. And that's a story of redemption, absolutely. I mean, he was very clear that he'd done something wrong.
Yeah.
And all that someone like Michael Vick would have to do to actually get on some redemption path, as it were, is just that, you know, giving away whatever money he has to help animals, go to the local shelter and help there, stop swanning around talking to, you know, giving nice lectures to kids sponsored by some big humane organization, and just get down there and not even necessarily work with the dogs and cats, but just sweep out the kennels, just do, you know, do some redemptive work. This has never happened.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and by the way, deft reference to the Humane Society. And again, just as this issue divides people and maybe couples and all kinds of things, it obviously really divides organizations and how they view Vic and you know what he did and what he's doing now and what he can sort of bring to the conversation. So, Michael, we are sort of unfortunately nearing the end of our time, but as an offshoot of this, but I think a really interesting thing that again was a piece of yours on ZoeNature.org. Maybe you could just in our remaining time at least partially discuss Obama and because again you know he certainly weighed in on Michael Vick, but I thought you one of the many interesting pieces that you wrote was sort of about how that was just one of Obama's sort of, well, three strikes, I believe, is what you actually, how you characterized it in your piece. Maybe you could just sort of talk at least briefly about the three strikes of Obama in that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, there were a lot of us, you know, Duncan, who, I mean, and, you know, humane groups all around the country who were writing to him. And there's no question that he knew that that we all hoped that he would go to the local shelter in Washington, D.C. and adopt a pet from there. I mean, that would have made just such a huge difference to the homeless pets cause, you know, President of the United States, adopt a dog. That didn't happen because it turned into being a sort of a political favor for the Kennedys and so on and so on. And then there was that really awkward situation on the White House lawn, the Thanksgiving before last, when he was just making kind of really off-color jokes about the turkey there, who gets, you know, there's always a turkey who gets, as they say, pardoned each year.
Yeah.
And he's standing there saying, well, hey, hey, ha, ha, I really just wanted to eat this sucker, quote, unquote.
Yeah.
And that just kind of, you know, strikes, there's just a little missing piece there somewhere. I just don't think he really quite understands the whole topic of animals and care of animals, and that kind of, I think, has rubbed a lot of us up the wrong way.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, maybe there's a minor tale of redemption around the corner for President Obama as well.
So. We will hope that he gets in touch with all of these issues.
That's right. Well, if he's smart, what he will be doing is going to ZoeNatured, ZoeNature.org, and where you'll find out more about the Stubby Dogs campaign, and that's STUBBY, and that'll also be on Facebook. And again, our guest has been Michael Mountain, editor-in-chief, co-founder of Zoe Nature. And again, as always, Michael, great to speak with you. Learned a lot, as I always do, and I think our listeners probably did as well.
And we'll have you over on ZoeNature.org before very long, Duncan. Nice to be with you.
All right. Thanks again. All right. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye then.
All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize. We have one more copy, in fact, of Melanie Bull's new book, The Dogs of Proud Spirit, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. All right. In just a moment, we're going to have a very brief chat with Jimmy Jablon, who operates the wildlife rehabilitation of Hernando, and in a gamut apparently designed to raise awareness and funds. He vowed to spend all of January in an enclosure with two lions, Florida Man, International Story. We'll speak to Jimmy in a few moments. First, though, actually, we got all kinds of folks calling in, not surprisingly, on Name That Animal Tune. Let's take the first one. Hi, you're on WMNF. Can you name that animal tune?
How can you not name that tune?
I should hope so.
I am the Waller.
Okay, what is your first name, sir?
It is Brian.
Okay, Brian, I'm going to put you back on hold, and I will get your information, and you will get a copy of Melanie Bowles' new book, The Dogs of Proud Spirit. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, so we will speak with Jimmy Jablon in a moment or two, but first let's hear an animal song from a band with Largo ties, no less. They're called the Bevins. This is Dogs Panting on Talking Animals. That was the Bevins with dogs panting. Right here on Talking Animals. Right now, we're going to be speaking, as promised, with Jim Jablon from Wildlife Rehabilitation of Hernando. And I've been spending the month in the lion's enclosure there at his facility. So, Jim, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Okay, well, welcome to Talking Animals. Thanks for making the time. And how's it going so far today?
It's going good. You guys really have Talking Animals on your show, though?
Well, as often as possible, but we rarely get the actual animals to speak, but we remain ever hopeful.
Well, I've been working on that. If it ever happens, I'm going to call you first.
Cool. I should hope that would be certainly a breaking story. Now, speaking of which, perhaps, how are Leah and Ed, your lion roommates, this morning thus far?
They are doing good. They've been behaving themselves and spent some time adjusting some cameras and laying in the sun and relaxing, and they're just doing what lions do this time of day.
Sure. Well, I know you've addressed this, of course, more than a few times at this point, but still the key question remains, why are you spending the month of January in the enclosure with those two lions?
Well, it's a twofold reason. First reason, of course, is I'm trying to raise funds to help support the facility. I've done it myself for the last 10 or 11 years, and I need the public's help now to continue giving these animals the home that I have given them now. Second reason is to bring awareness to the fact that these animals are here because of people not doing the right thing. They're not pets. They shouldn't be in cages. They shouldn't be bought and sold. And the result of all those actions ends up with them being somewhere unnatural to them. So here we just try to give them the best we can, let them live out their lives. Most of them have come from other facilities where they didn't have the luxuries they get here to try to be a little more natural.
And so Jim, I mean, I guess that raises the question. I mean, how did they either arrive at your facility or, as you say, if many of them came from another facility before they came to yours, how did they get there? It sounds like at least some of them, from what you're saying, were either pets or used in other ways that may not be appropriate for exotic and wild animals.
Well, not appropriate for any animal. Some of them have come from facilities that have been actually shut down by the USDA or Florida Fish and Wildlife, where the animals have to be removed and put into a new place,
mm-hmm.
and everybody gets together and helps out with that. They come from animals that might be confiscated from people where the animals were confiscated because the people had them in unsafe conditions and weren't permitted to have such. A few of them have come here. We've actually had to purchase a few of them just to keep company with the ones that have come from other facilities because we don't keep any animals here by themselves. We try to keep everything paired up or in groups.
Sure.
Because there's no life for them if they're sitting by themselves in an enclosure.
Right.
They pretty much come from those three places.
Sure.
And, of course, you've got the oddball animals like the llamas that come from the alpacas that came from an alpaca rescue that was overflowing with them. We have parrots here that come from Florida Parrot Rescue down by you. They get just overwhelmed, and we try to provide some room for some different animals. Some racehorses from Ocala that are retired that would normally be put down, but they're here living out their life. We just try to give the animals a place to go. Besides in the ground.
Sure. Well, so back to, spending the month in the lion's enclosure. I mean, how exactly is that raising funds, for those animals' care?
Well, we live streaming it 24 hours a day, and people are going onto the website and they're clicking into the Ustream and watching it. And I spend many, many hours a day talking about the animals,
mm-hmm.
Their flight, and basically asking for help, something I've never done before.
And so you're in the lion's enclosure right now as we speak.
Yes. I'm sitting right here in front of the computer in the lockout. Each cage has what's called a lockout. Put the animals in if you need to go in the cage. So.
I see. Okay. And so so people that are watching the live video stream, and again, I guess the website is WROHFlorida.com to get access to that.
Yeah.
And so when they watch that, then they are inclined to donate to the facility. Is that correct?
Well, we would hope so. Once they check the website out and maybe get on the chat room and learn a little bit more about what we do here.
Sure.
We would hope that they would go ahead and help. And if they can't help financially, then maybe they can help by spreading the word.
Sure. And what is the annual budget there to operate wildlife rehabilitation in Hernando County?
Well, to feed these guys, it's about $75,000 a year. That doesn't include the vet expenses, the caging, the maintenance, and all that stuff.
Yeah. And that's you know, obviously a sizable budget. I mean, how much have you raised so far in this January effort?
Honestly, I'm not aware of that.
Okay.
I do not know. I have not checked it or had access to it.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you'll be finding out soon because you're.
About 12 days.
Yeah. Okay. So you won't actually know what you've raised by doing this until your month is up.
No, I'm trying to get a friend of mine who's got access to the account and all of that to go ahead and give me a number so we can go ahead and at least post it on the website so
sure.
people can see
yeah.
what's actually going on and want to get involved.
Sure. And we're just having maybe one more minute or so here, Jim. But I guess the you know one of the other key questions is what sort of contingency do you have in place there if something goes wrong, if Leah or Ed decides to get well frisky to say the least, maybe more than frisky, what happens to protect you?
Well, I'm gonna have to protect myself. I'm using all the caution necessary when I'm with these animals. I've been with them a long time. I know how to read them. They're not completely full grown, so I have that edge, and I'm just careful. I respect them, I respect what they can do, and I don't let myself get in a position where I'm not going to be able to get out of it.
Okay.
So I
guess some would wonder, like, just about the message this campaign is sending, and especially the images if people are clicking onto the live video stream and seeing you in a lion's enclosure with two lions. I mean, are there concerns that you share with others about, you know, what that might suggest to people about if they were, you know, say, well, hey, I guess this is safe to kind of be around lions?
Nope. I tell people nonstop while I'm on the chat room that these animals were raised from babies, and in another couple of months, I will never again be able to come into this enclosure with them. They're 400 to 500-pound predators. They do have a very emotional side to them, and I have a bond with them, but that bond will not continue like this once they reach a certain size.
Okay.
They're not pets. They should never be kept as pets because
yeah.
they're cute and furry in the beginning, and they cannot be handled later on. They are not something that you want to have, and I spread that word nonstop.
Okay. Well, that probably goes a long way, and it sounds like you realize there's sort of a shelf life if anyone's to ever be hanging out with lions or animals like that. It sounds like you realize that and that you're towards the end of that shelf life with Leah and Ed.
Yes, very short shelf life.
That yeah.
is a real serious consequence if you violate that rule that you need to follow, you know, yourself.
Okay. Well, Jim, thank you so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals. Again, if people are interested in seeing the video stream or finding out more about this, it's WROHFlorida.com. And we've been speaking with Jim Jablon. Thank you so much, Jim, for joining us on Talking Animals.
Guys, keep spreading that word about animals, all right?
All right, I sure will. Thank you.
All right, be good.
Okay. All right. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals in WMNF Tampa. Again, we're now airing every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to noon, so we'll be back next Wednesday, January 26th, when phone lines permitting. Our guest will be Dr. Dame Daphne Sheldrick of the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, which runs an orphanage in Kenya for elephants and rhinos. I hope you'll join me then. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, and keep an eye out for updates and announcements about the Talking Animals Festival. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the great Scott Elliott with his All Souls version of It's the Music, now airing Wednesdays from noon to 3 p.m. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This is the Neville Brothers with their version of Fly Like an Eagle, taking us right up to the NPR News, and then Scott Elliott and his glorious fun-filled program on WMNF Tampa. Thanks for listening. Take care. We'll catch you next Wednesday on Talking Animals.
Time keeps on slipping into the future. Slipping into the future.
Well, I know there's a solution.